budget hero, Nate.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. This is Nate Pamplin, and I just want to walk through a few items. I sent out an email on Wednesday night that has a balance sheet, which I'll be referring to here in a moment. But first, just a 30,000-foot overview. The legislature adopted the budget on the 105th day of a 105-day session on Sunday, April 28th. Overall, a significant new resources appropriated to the department, over $45 million, mostly in general fund state. So a significant increase over the current appropriation. In the capital budget, we also fared really well. We had $53.1 million of new work and $58 million of reappropriations. And then, there's little pieces of department work scattered throughout sometimes in other agencies' rows, but one I wanted to call out is within RCO, the Recreation and Conservation Office for the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program. That entire package was for $85 million, of which $15 million comes to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, so also another really good add on the capital budget. As you know, the fee bill did not pass, including having an extension of the Columbia River Salmon Steelhead endorsement. But why don't we? I'll now orient you to the table on the balance sheet. There's three sections: the problem statement, some solutions, and then a summary of new work. You'll also see columns that show this upcoming biennium that starts July 1st, and then some projected amounts for the next two fiscal or the biennium after that for 21-23. And we put those columns there as a way to show that a lot of the funding that we secured for 19-21 is actually one time. And there's also significant more money that's parked in the first fiscal year of the biennium than in the second. So just wanted to explain why we laid out by fiscal year, and so you can see some of the gaps and how the problem statement increases one biennium out, because a lot of the way the funding is booked is one time. So let's stay on the theme of some good news and direct you down to the bottom third of the page where we summarize new work. There's the first three rows summarize some new investments in hatchery production. The funding to the department is ongoing for $7 million of biennium. And then there's some pass-through funding to tribes and PUDs. We also secured some one-time revenue to do a bunch of work to improve prey recovery work for salmon and some other salmon assessments. That's going to go on just for this biennium. We have some ongoing work for vessels and some one-time funding in the first fiscal year to help with rulemaking to license commercial whale watch vessels. There's a piece for ongoing work for enhancing conservation. As you might recall, that package that the commission passed back in September was for about $13 million. And this is where we are really trying to make a significant down payment on what the needs are for the agency on the conservation work. We ended up getting $640,000, and that's directed for enforcement of the hydraulic project approvals. There's some ongoing funding for wolves, some one-time funding for shellfish restoration, and one-time funding on Skagit elk. An interesting provision for the global wildlife trafficking. This was really just a technical fix that we were hoping for to get as general fund. The funding came through, so we got the funding, but essentially the legislature just appropriated funding that we already have in a non-appropriated account. So it's there. They basically just gave us direction to spend revenue that we already have. But it's good to have that just secured and rounded out the commitment we needed for some new FTEs to enforce the initiative 1401 from a couple years ago. And then lastly, a really successful ad here was ongoing support for the RFEGs. So I'll pause there and just see if there's any questions about just the overall budget and some of the new work before I orient you to the problem statement.
Any questions?
Commissioner McIsaac.
Sure, Thorburn. Okay, go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac, then Thorburn.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Question about the Southern Resident Orca Hatchery Production New Work business. So back in September, we passed this proposal for 50 million more Chinook smolts, and that went through the task force process and went into the governor's budget, and now it's something is coming out of the legislative session, and my question is going to get around to how to properly characterize the success or failure of that proposal. We met with the National Marine Fisheries Service and maybe some other co-managers as well, and told them that the legislative process was considering this, and they said, well, please let us know when the legislative process is over. So I can't recall exactly the numbers of the amount of money that we had asked for relative to that proposal for operating and capital. It seemed to me, as I was tracking this, that in the House budget there was actually more money than we asked for. So I guess, and Nate, maybe we could talk offline later to make sure I got all my facts straight. But in terms of an overall characterization of whether or not the proposal that we put forward is moving forward or it failed, I just want to make sure that if I report on that to people, I'm saying the right thing. And again, if it gets too complicated, I can just give you a call offline and we can deal with it.
Madam Chair, Commissioner McIsaac, just from a really high level, yes, the commission motion was for 50 million additional smolts. Looking at the amount of resources or freeboard within our existing facilities and where we thought we could actually produce fish within the existing space that we have, this basically funds us at that max level. I believe $7 million will go towards about 24 million smolts, and that's a combination of Chinook, Coho, and Chum. So we can get you more details on that, and of course, then as it goes into actually, you know, in some cases amending HGMPs and things like that, and the tribal co-management coordination, that will, you know, get sorted out. But at this point in time, that's probably the best summary that I can provide. And then having the additional one-time funding through tribes and PUD is above and beyond where we had at least originally looked. Finally, I am 95% confident that we did get the $1 million in the capital budget to do the hatchery assessment. But Raquel's squinting, so I'm now less confident. It's slipping down to below 50% confident now. But we will circle back. I thought we had the master plan funded, and I probably somewhere in my pile of budget paperwork here, I can find that here in a moment.
Thank you for that, Nate. I knew this. The proposal was staggered for immediate near term and maybe a little bit later, so I will catch up with you, but it would be proper to characterize this as that proposal continues to move forward, and the funding was provided to allow for some immediate, the things to be done that can be done immediately, and to continue to move the rest forward. Would that be accurate?
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Thorburn.
I have an interpretation of some of the shorthand on the table, please. So what is the difference between Southern Resident Orca Hatchery Production and Southern Resident Orca Prey Availability? What activities are different there?
Yeah, so I believe there's some different components under the Southern Resident Killer Whale Task Force recommendations, and so some of the work that was funded for, Raquel, help me out, but the I think there's some dam passage investigations above blocked areas. There's some work with dam elevation management to address fish predators of salmon. There's a couple of other components like that, so I can follow up and get you those details, Commissioner.
Thank you.
The pinniped work, however, was not funded. That would have been in that same category, and that was not included.
I was talking over you. What was not funded?
The proposals for pinniped work, there was one for the Columbia River, $1.2 million, and then one for Puget Sound for $1.2 million. Neither of those were included within that particular row.
Oh, okay. And then the RFAGs, is this new, it says enhanced, so I assume it's on top of ongoing RFAG funding, and it looks like it is ongoing. As I recall from their last presentation, it's been a while that this is greatly needed and will enhance that work, that great work that they do.
I believe it basically takes the one-time funding and makes it ongoing and permanent, and thus that's where it was
called
an enhancement.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any more questions or comments on the good news part of the budget? Okay, Nate, tell us the bad news.
Okay, so so starting at the top of the page, the over $30 million structural deficit is represented in those first two rows. And as a reminder, we already had cut $2 million when we went through the zero-based budgeting exercise to try to reduce the footprint beginning July 1. And then that also included the Columbia River Salmon Steelhead endorsement that we were hoping to have extended. So that's the first two rows divided by fiscal year. We also had requested a funding for a number of enhancements that were currently booked in this biennium was funded by one-time dollars. So this includes things like the Skagit catch and release or some of the Mitchell Act production or some new requirements to comply with the Mitchell Act biop, our Fish Washington app. So we had pursued those hoping that we'd get new general fund or fee that's for work that we had just initiated really this current biennium. Those enhancements were not funded. So there was also a number of other enhancements of brand new work that I did not include on this table. This was just trying to include this as a problem statement because if we want to sustain the work that we're currently doing, then we need $4.5 million for this coming biennium. This next row about the COLAs and the central service cost increases not backed by revenue, this is a little complicated, and this is why we're constantly in a structural deficit. So let me walk you through it. Essentially, if you divide the agency's budget up into four major fund sources of general fund, state wildlife account, federal, and local, and we have a dollar increase of costs, the legislature provides us the quarter that goes with the general fund, and they give us a spending authority to spend the other 75 cents, but we don't have the ability to generate that 75 cents. And so we had over $20 million or so of COLAs that were approved. We anticipated within our $31 million structural deficit, a little over $4 million was anticipated and factored in. The legislature provided us general fund funding to cover the general fund portion of those COLAs, but that still leaves a sizable gap of over $6 million for the biennium. We also backed out some of our contracts that we have are annual contracts, and so we'll be able to go back to federal agencies or local groups and say, okay, well, here's the new staff costs, and then be able to have cost recovery for those salaries. In other instances, like Pittman Robertson or our Bonneville Power Administration contracts, those are primarily, the same year after year after year, and thus we end up having an erosion of our purchasing power. So to keep us flush, that's where that additional $6 million impact comes in. The next row has to do with, there was just a line item that said the legislature wanted us to cut $500,000 for efficiencies, and then we're also just calling out that our federal block grants are in decline. And I should state that I really don't know what year 2, 3, and 4 look like on this chart, so I just carried year 1 throughout the next 4 years. So that's those can fluctuate, but we didn't find out about this really until we got the apportionment letter a month or two ago that Pittman Robertson is going to be down $2.4 million and Dingell Johnson is going to be down $200,000, and those are both annual estimates. With PR... Oh, go ahead.
Commissioner Torrey, it's annual federal fiscal year. Is that how we receive it?
It is, but annual. We shift it to a state fiscal year contract. So
I see. Okay.
So we did have, because we were worried about this day would come where PR wouldn't be quite as strong as what we've had over the past 3 or 4 years, we've been carrying about $1 million of balance forward that you're allowed to move over to the next contract year, as well as some of the, we were funding some of our wildlife conflict work, and some of that might be picked up with some of the general fund that was covered, so that might free up some Pittman Robertson. So the in summary, of those two block grants that are both going down, we're looking at least a $1.5 million hit per year. And again, there might be something that changes for next biennium, so those are definitely just estimates at this point in time, but important for us, because as we went through the zero-based budgeting analysis, and we were directed to look at where we have flexible money, or in this case, kind of partially flexible money, and we can repurpose money to higher priorities and cut lower priorities, it's part of the overall budget balancing problem statement. The other area that go ahead.
Commissioner Horvern, again, another question. So I know one of the problems we've had with the Wildlife Fund is that the legislature for the past few biennia has directed us to spend down reserve there because you were using carryover in the same way, as I understand it, that you're talking about with PR. So how long, in terms of reserve that we have in PR, how long are we going to be able to sustain that going forward?
Yeah, so right now, when you look at our state wildlife account, kind of at March close, we're basically, almost at zero. It's and this is the time period, April and May is where we get a majority of our license sales, and so our revenue will exceed our expenditure here for the next couple, 3 months. And then you start, continuing to spend down, and you look at right now, depending on how much pressure we put on the state wildlife account as we balance the budget, it might be temporarily upside down next March. And then next spring, it will pick it up again. But it's each time you kind of apply, if you were to look at this, it would be like a wave. If you were to graph this, it would look like a wave, but then tilt that about 20 degrees because it will continue to go down because of our purchasing power erosion that happens. So,
like some of our endangered species. Anyway, go ahead.
So The other area I just want to call out for projections on the COLAs, that line item where in year two it's negative 3974. And then in years three and four, I'd also just indicate that is just to sustain the current COLAs. We know in the biennium of 21-23, there will be additional costs, and there's going to be costs that are approved across the four major fund sources, and we only get a quarter for the general fund portion. And so, really, when you look at it, with all the one-time funding that expires for this biennium, and we know that the COLAs will be going higher the next biennium, for the 2021 ledge session, if we don't make any other reductions, and we were just trying to sustain our current services, we're looking at a request of over $46 million. And that's where it's really disappointing, because we were hoping this ledge session to finally get the department stable and for us to then pivot the conversation with the legislature about what are all the other areas of our mandate that is poorly funded, or areas that the public wants us to see, you know, greater improvements in. So with these kind of numbers, we end up, it sucks up almost all the oxygen in the room for us to talk about just how to stay afloat. So let's turn now just to the current biennium. The legislature did provide a little over $24 million of one-time funding. They booked more of that in the first fiscal year. And the thinking there was, hey, department, you have about a $31 million structural deficit. We'll give you half of it, keep you afloat the first fiscal year, come back, and we'll talk during the supplemental. The challenge is because all the COLAs went into effect, the other efficiencies, and our decline in federal block grants, we're still looking at a $6 million gap just for this first fiscal year. Not to mention, then, thinking about some of the best budgeting practices that Commissioner Thorburn raised and pointing out that the state wildlife account starts to go upside down. And if it goes upside down within a fiscal year, you know, that's okay. We can explain that we'll have cash receipts coming in towards the end of the fiscal year that keeps us whole. It's an awkward memo to write to OFM, but that's something that we can do. We can't have the account where we can't make payroll. And so that's the challenge here, is that we're going to have to figure out how to slow down some of our expenditures to match with the incoming revenue. And so that's going to be another challenge here. And as we're balancing the budget, we're really looking at expenditures and revenue by month and seeing how best to handle this. Best budgeting practices would be to have 2 to 3 months as what's called a working capital reserve. And we have been pushing that boundary all biennium, and we were directed to do so. This isn't something that folks, as Commissioner indicated, we were pressed to spend down account balances. So I will pause there to see if there's any technical questions about this, and then maybe we can spend a little bit of time talking about process.
Questions for anybody? Okay, I think Nate, thank you for that. That was, you know, one of your big strengths is being able to explain very complicated issues, and that's coming out right now. I think I've heard several questions from commissioners offline about the process, and specifically what part of that do we weigh in on. So I think we're all interested in hearing the process part of your conversation.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So a couple thoughts. I mean, we have been talking about what was at stake since last June. At the June Commission meeting, we also had webinars. We've been talking to sports groups and conservation groups. We've been working with our Budget and Policy Advisory Group to help verify what we put at risk. And so there's been, and we've talked to all of those affected staff almost 10 months ago. So as we balance the budget and make these decisions on where to try to invest $24 million of one-time funding to cover a $45 million problem statement, there's a couple aspects here of trying to think about, well, keep in mind, how much do we ask for in the supplemental? What types of services do we reduce or eliminate out of those that have already been identified? But those are very sensitive conversations that do affect staff, and I want to make sure, so how do we balance this through the commission process with respecting that we have a lot of work to do when you implement a reduction in force? And it affects not only the positions that are cut, but oftentimes it can result in a bumping scenario. And so you might think you're reducing just X number of positions, when actually it might be 2X or 2.5X of positions that are affected. And thus, you know, as we think about this, we're pouring through this as an executive management team right now. This is something we've had. It's going to dominate our time here, especially as we lead up to the start of the biennium. And what we would recommend is that perhaps we schedule a meeting with the commission's executive committee, perhaps in a couple weeks, and thus we could walk through the executive committee some of the budget balancing decisions that we're thinking, and that way the executive committee could provide input to the director before he finalizes and balances the budget.
Any comments on Nate's proposal?
Commissioner
Thorpe. I don't know who should go first. Let's go with Tim first this time.
Having led an agency through several rifts, it's just a morale buster. And I'm already... I should say the transparency that you're giving to this whole effort and have, you know, for the past biennium, I think is very helpful in terms of, you know, my interactions with staff and everything. But it, you know, the not knowing, the longer it goes without the decisions being made, it just gets harder and harder on morale. So I know, you know, this is what's consuming everything. I just encourage that you keep moving forward so that those hard decisions get made soon. I always felt like it, you know, it's a big family, and it, you know, you go through a grieving process. It's very hard on agency morale, and so, you know, just to keep going with the transparency, I think that's really important. But the sooner that you can move on what needs to happen with the rifts, I think the better, because the healing process can then start going.
Commissioner McIsaac,
comment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Is anybody there? Hello?
We may have lost Commissioner McIsaac.
We did.
Okay, he will come back on, I feel very sure. Does anybody else have comments or on the process of deciding how to deal with this very difficult budget?
To probably get some feedback, this is Commissioner Thorburn again, and I'd just like to make a political observation, thinking sort of moving outside of what needs to happen operationally immediately or very soon. As we move forward and try again, and I think we should try... right now, hard in the supplemental year to see if we can get some mending going on here, but the political observation that I want to make is, as I've listened to some comments coming out of the legislature and other comments reading, you know, sports articles and that sort of thing, sportsman's articles and that sort of thing, there was some sort of punishment to us for the Gilnetting decision. And what that has turned into in comments that I've seen is that Gilnetting is the problem with our salmonid, our listed salmonid stocks. And I just, harvest is not the problem with our endangered species. It's so regulated, it's so managed, and it just seems like that's a straightforward message that we can counter. But I know there are a lot of voices that come in and talk to the legislators, but it just... It irritates me. I mean, the one thing we really have control over is harvest, and you know, whether it's commercial in fishing, whether it's commercial harvest or sports harvest, it is not what's contributing to the population declines in our endangered species.
Okay, on this one, this is Commissioner Baker. This is one where you can't say that, you know, well, speaking for all of us, because I don't know how all of us feel on that. But I do want to say, Commissioner Thorburn, that you know, you've hit one of the nails on our budget on the head. But I also want to say that it isn't for lack of trying that message didn't get across. I mean, the message did get across. It was not received. Our people... I mean, really did yeoman's work on that specific issue, and it is something that we have to talk about as a commission and listen to everybody's views and figure out how to deal with in advance of next session, because it's not going to go away. It's not going to go. We know that for sure, because this is at least the second, maybe the third biennium that we have been put through this knot hole. So...
I completely understand, you know, that it was not it was a message that was being fed. If anything, just expressing my frustration and bringing it up so that we, because I think we as the commission also need to assist with that messaging and just figure out how can we get this turned around.
Commissioner,
go ahead, Don. We lost you for a few minutes there.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. My cell phone has battery and has signal, but doesn't seem to work, so I'm on a different line here. So if that last conversation was about some sort of learned exercise, then I'm fully in support of that. But what I was talking about earlier was the process for deciding on important things are not funded if we're going through a cutting exercise or cutting decision process. And I think what the proposal was to delegate this to the executive committee. And so for the commissioners that are not on the executive committee, that would mean that they don't have a specified role in the decision process about, well, what projects, what efforts, what work falls down on the priority and is not there. We went through the zero-based budgeting exercise, but the commission did not receive a full totem pole, so to speak, on all of that. We saw the material in June and August on the $230 million packages, but some things were funded specifically by the legislature, and it gets very complicated. But when it gets down to a final decision of things on the bubble and what is most important for the state, I think the commissioners should all be involved in that decision at some point. So I'm not comfortable as one commissioner with just delegating this to four commissioners on the executive committee. On the other hand, it is something that is not fruitful to go through in an open session where everybody is listening and you debate this and you debate that, and people can end up making taking home the wrong impression about the importance of the work, particularly if it's in that bubble area. So I don't know for sure what the right answer is here, but I think it is one of the most important policy decisions that an overarching board like ours can make, and that we should have some involvement in this. So just that, I'm not making a proposal for an alternative process yet, but I think it's a very, very serious question, and we do need to spend some time thinking about it. And I'm just not comfortable with delegating it away.
Any further comments?
Commissioner, Vice Chair Baker.
Go ahead, Commissioner Carpenter. Chair Carpenter.
I understand Commissioner McKay's concerns, but it is going to be a very difficult task to do in the big group, although the big group probably is going to have some opportunity and to weigh in. I was just going to ask you, see if the director had any thoughts on that. I think we had some dialogue about it. I want to know if you had any additional thoughts, Kelly.
Well, I think I would suggest I want to concur with where Commissioner Thorburn was as well, that time is crucial, and we don't want folks hanging out for too long. So I like the idea of going to the executive committee. I recognize the shortcomings thereof. I think we could commit to have that kind of be the workhorse group, and then reach out to other commissioners individually and see what we can be ready with for the May 31st full commission meeting.
I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility that can work. It's a difficult situation, but for the four or maybe at some point five commissioners, maybe not by March or by May 31st, but for the commissioners who are not involved and have constituents say, well, why did you go along with the decision for that thing on the bubble to succeed or fail? And the answer is, I had nothing to do with it. And they say, why not? And that's not a very satisfactory discussion either.
Anything further? I think what we just decided is that for lack of a better alternative, and only for lack of a better alternative, we would have a very soon meeting of the executive committee, but that the executive committee would only make recommendations to the commission in a timely manner. I'm not sure if we decided this, but possibly no big decisions would be made before those meetings happen, and then we would present the recommendations fully fleshed out to the rest of the commission at the May conference. Is that what we decided? The May 31st conference call? Is that what we decided?
That was what I suggested.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Commissioner Baker, can I just make a comment in response to Commissioner McIsaac's concern? If it's okay to go ahead.
Sure, go ahead.
If a constituent approached me with, you know, why was this decision made, or why did you make that decision, I don't think my response would be, well, I had nothing to do with it, because we've been rolled into this process during the planning. We had the zero-based budgeting presented to us. that's the suite of options. You know, we kind of, we did some prioritization exercises as the commission. We've been involved. These are awful decisions that have to be made. And, you know, none is going to be good for the whole. But some decisions have to be made. We've got this whole now HOLE kind of hole, and some constituent is going to be unhappy about any one of the decisions that has to be made. But I feel like, you know, I've been involved. I'm not going to say, you know, it was made without me. I've been involved in this. And my answer is going to be, you know, these were tough decisions, but we can't sustain everything right now. We just don't have the funding. And that was one of the things that had to be cut or something like that. I feel like I'm not entirely left out of the process. I'm looking at the decisions that were made during the zero-based budgeting exercise, know that that's going to kind of be the plate from which this is chosen, and that I had some involvement in that.
Anything further? I think, according to Tammy, we had an hour and a half for this call, which leaves us about 7 minutes. I don't want to cut such an important discussion short, but our options are to cut it short or extend our timeline. Tammy, do you have anything to say about that?
You can go, excuse me, you can go longer.
Oh. Yeah, that's good to know. Okay, then with that in mind, anything further on this process? I would like to, I have a question, and it's a question for our lawyers. This is one of those very few circumstances where there are very good person reasons, personnel and management reasons, not to have a public debate. On the other hand, we try to be all as transparent as we absolutely can. Mixed results on that, but I think all of us have made it clear that to the extent that we can, we want to be transparent. There are a couple of exceptions that allow us to go into executive session on personnel and potential litigation. So I guess, Bill, and it doesn't have to be now, but I'd like to know if specific budget cuts that affect staff that we don't directly manage could fit into one of those to allow this conversation to be to all of us and not just the executive. And if you're the executive committee, and if you're on the phone and able to answer that now, that would be great. And if not, if you could get back to one of us, especially me, soon, I'd appreciate it.
Barbara, he's not on the line, but I'll make sure he gets the message and gets back to you as soon as he can.
Okay, thanks.
I think that's an excellent idea.
It's pretty hard to run a place like this when we can't discuss the most sensitive of discussions that we have to make. So that's the genesis of the question. Anything further on budget from Nate or Kelly or commissioners?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just wanted to circle back on the statement I had made about a line item in the capital budget regarding the master plan for assessing new hatcheries to meet the hatchery production goals. That funding was not included in the budget. So.
No, that's disappointing. Anything else on that from, I think, Don, you were asking that question. Okay, let's go on to the general discussion then. Does anybody have anything else that they want to say today? I do have a couple of comments, but I'll wait.
Commissioner Thorburn, just a story to share quickly.
Go ahead.
So this week, the co-managers and the Kalispell tribe and several of the downstream PUDs are doing a very visible surveillance and suppression effort of Northern Pike in Lake Roosevelt. We've been hearing about that concern. That's the co-managers, that's the Caldwells, the Spokanes, and us have been working on now for 4 or 5 years, really trying to keep that vacuum cleaner fish from getting over the Grand Coulee. So far, nothing's been caught downstream, but there was one large fish that was caught pretty close to the dam by the Caldwells last season. They really, with this work, gotten a pretty good understanding of its distribution and some of its biology in the reservoir. But this is an all-out effort. They're getting a lot of media coverage, all hands on deck. The Caldwells have 3 boats that they're putting out. The Spokanes have a couple. We've got a couple. Then other personnel from other agencies like the PUDs are joining in. So on Tuesday, I went out on one of the department's old Boston whalers and gill-netted Northern Pike. It was really interesting to see the process and what's going on and learning a lot more about what has been learned. There is some kind of upside good news. The age structure of the fish of the Northern Pike that are being caught has really changed. We aren't catching a whole lot of real mature fish. Unfortunately, the Northern Pike becomes productive at a very young age, and they're very productive. So, but what we've learned from the Ponderay River is if you can kind of move the age structure, you can mitigate and kind of keep things under control on a year-by-year basis with surveillance, getting an idea of what the previous year's production was, and then the amount of depression that needs to go into it. And we're kind of getting to that point, it sounds like, in the reservoir. So learned a whole lot, saw some big, unfortunately, pretty big northern pike, but mostly younger ones. We were happy that we caught one large adult male, or a female that looked like she was about to add to the population. So anyway, it was a very interesting day. I was glad to have the opportunity, and everybody's doing a fabulous job with that work.
Wonderful. Kim, anybody else have anything to add under general?
Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead. Commissioner McIsaac.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. A question for the director or staff on the hatchery policy review. At our commission meeting back in January or February, whenever it was, there was a discussion of the process moving forward, and I understand that staff might be working on some sort of a written process and scheduled document that the public can see and the public can understand when they might be able to have some input on the process. So my question is there something in the works that's in writing that can be distributed to commissioners and folks on that?
Commissioner, this is Kyle Laddix. Yes, there is a more detailed schedule that has been developed. It was being reviewed and somewhat finalized yesterday, and that will likely go up on the website. There is a page on the website that has had a general schedule and some more information on the hatchery reform policy. We'll likely put that on that page so that anyone can see it.
Great, thank you. I think that'll help a lot with the transparency of the process and giving the public a full understanding of how this is going to go. There seems to be still quite a few questions on this, and I know on both sides of the issues there's a lot of interest.
Well, this is Commissioner Baker. On HSRG and our review, I went to the meeting here in Olympia. We had, I think it was the first public meeting on the HSRG review, and I planned to stay about a half hour. I ended up staying the whole 3 hours because it was fascinating, and I actually encourage any of you, if these are in your area, to go. Of course, I learned a lot, but the one thing that came up that was of note, which I talked to Ron Warren about later, was that there was some confusion about exactly what was being reviewed, specifically whether it was whether the policy is working in terms of our conservation goals or whether the department has implemented the policy. And as everybody knows, our constituents are really savvy and picked up on this little nuance and ask a bunch of very good questions. And the last I heard, both questions are being answered. And so I just wanted to say it was a good experience for me. And so I guess we're all going to know when and where those meetings are going to happen soon, according to Kyle. So thank you, Kyle. Anything further on general discussion? Okay, well, so my two points are quick. One is to let people know that the Big Tent Committee, I consider it kind of the utility player of the commission. Things go there that don't fit particularly well anywhere else. We are currently on an ongoing process of looking at strategic planning, and that to me, and what I've asked, goes all the way from our values as a commission down through the mission statement, to the strategic plan, to the director's performance review, and then to allotments. Nate is doing a lot to help with that and has added that as an assignment to the BPAG committee. So I would ask that we be told, not just by posting on the website, but be let known when those BPAG, when and where the BPAG committees are being held. And then, as a side note, I'd like to add to the Big Tent Committee just a general discussion about agenda planning generally for our meetings. In some part to do, it appears, since we talk about it at every one of these conference calls and those discussions take a lot of time, I think we just need to at least review agenda planning, figure out how it happens, when it happens, who's involved, and whether we want to change any of that. So I am proposing adding that to the work that the Big Tent Committee is going to do, and wanted to make sure that I didn't hear any objections from any of you. Okay, any comments on that?
Sounds
I'm going to take that as, oh, go ahead, that's okay. Take that as a yes. And then finally, two really quick things. The other thing that I've done lately, I went to the WAG meeting and ran into the WAG meeting here in Olympia, ran into Jay, who came all the way over from Spokane to attend the entire meeting. I did not attend the entire meeting. But I just want to say that the investment on the few years that we've had, I used to go to these WAG meetings years ago, and they were basically open, awful combat. And now what I saw at this last meeting is that even when really, really difficult topics were being aired, people were calm, they were respectful, they only talked when called on, and I was just impressed by the civility of the whole group. We've got a lot of work to do on wolves, and Sir Commissioner Thorburn will do a great job as chair of our wolf committee, but again, if you get a chance, go to a WAG meeting. And then finally, my last comment is, I mentioned a couple of meetings ago that I would like to look at a webinar as a pilot project for this group on these conference calls. I think it would be, once we got used to it, a vast improvement. Tammy and I have been talking about that, and where that sits is that the entire agency is going to go to a new operating system for their computer programs, and that operating system will allow those of us who don't use state-issued computers to log into our official Fish and Wildlife account from our personal computers. And the new, it's called O365, the new operating system apparently has great sort of new improvements on how to conduct these kinds of meetings. And so I've tentatively agreed, pending your approval, to wait to even think about doing this
until that transition is complete, which I understand is going to be soon. I also like to point out that, you know, I know we all know how to use a phone and we're comfortable with this. I'm not suggesting that we absolutely change everything. I'm just suggesting that we give it a try. And so the amended request is that we give it a try when this new system is put in place. It doesn't make any sense to me to buy outside off-the-shelf webinar capability if we're going to have it interior in our own system very soon. So that's the update on that. Comments?
Agreed.
Thank you for looking into it. I think it'll be a great improvement.
Yeah, I apologize for not having my phone on mute there for a few minutes. I had to direct my son, so I apologize for that.
Hey, well, is there anything? Go ahead.
This is Kelly. Just following up, especially on your comment on webinars, I want to remind folks we have a webinar terming it a digital open house Monday evening for the general public at 7 p.m., and encourage you all to watch if you are bored.
Anything further from anybody on anything? What have we missed?
I just want to comment, this Commissioner Carpenter, I'd like to compliment the group of five, a small group of commissioners, and certainly the staff for what I consider to be a very helpful and informative meeting on some extremely difficult issues. So thank you all.
Thank you for that, Larry. Anything further? Okay, with that, then I'm going to adjourn this meeting at 10:08 on May 10th and hope that everybody, well, staff included, gets out and has a good day today.
Thank you.